Well, how much do you know about Omri, or the family of Omri? Well, you've probably heard his name, but you probably can't recall something specific that comes to mind that he did, or maybe where he's from. Well, today I hope to paint a more detailed picture of who Omri was and how his story helps us better understand some turbulent times, roughly 50 years after Solomon's death. Well, the story of Omri is found in 1 Kings 16 and starts in verse 16 in chapter 16 and is only about 12 verses long. And Omri was the sixth king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and he ruled for 12 years before his son King Ahab succeeded him. But the Bible doesn't say which tribe or city Omri is from. It's not mentioned, and nobody really knows. But before Omri was king, he was the commander of the army of Israel under King Elah. However, King Elah was killed by his servant, Zimri, who was the commander of half of his chariots. Zimri reigned in his place, but only for 7 days. The people of Israel didn't want Zimri as king. He must not have been a likable guy. And they decided to declare Omri the king. So Omri fought against Zimri in the capital city of Tirzah. And when Zimri saw that he was losing, he ended up burning the palace down around him and ended up dying. However, this did not solidify Omri's kingship. As we see in 1 Kings 16, verse 21, it says, "Then the people of Israel were divided into two parts. Half of the people followed Tibni, the son of Ginath, to make him king, and half followed Omri. But the people who followed Omri prevailed over the people who followed Tibni, the son of Ginath. So Tibni died, and Omri reigned." Omri reigned in Tirzah for 6 years. It's not much to look at today, obviously. It's been destroyed. But Omri decided he didn't like it in Tirzah after about 6 years, and he built a new city you may have heard about. In verse 24, it says, "And he bought the hill of Samaria from Shemer, for 2 talents of silver. Then he built on the hill, and he called the name of the city which he built Samaria, after the name of Shemer, the owner of the hill." So Omri was the founder of the city that was called Samaria. However, the name Samaria is actually a Greek word. And if you look at the Hebrew word, it's Shomeron, which is actually closer to the name Shemer, the previous owner's name. And several commentaries state that naming the city after Shemer may have been a condition of this sale to Omri. So you can see here where Samaria is, up in the northern area, and there's also the city of Jezreel, which is also another major city. You can see that in relation to Jerusalem. So the hill was apparently a prime location with natural defenses and fertile land around a strong fortified position. And we know this because in 2 Kings 17, verse 5, it mentions that it took the king of Assyria 3 years to siege Samaria and conquer it. And Adam Clark's commentary states that throughout the history, after Omri, the city changed owners several times and was even razed to the ground. As you can see, it's kind of like that way right now. But around 30 BC, Herod the Great restored it to its ancient splendor, which would have been the Samaria during Jesus' time. Adam Clark ends his commentary on Samaria with, "It is now a place of little consequence." But you can sort of see on the side of the picture there that there's the steep cliffs and they go all around and it's on the top of a hill. So it would have been an easier place to fortify and protect against. Well, Omri's biblical story ends on these verses. Verse 25, Omri did evil in the eyes of the Lord and did worse than all who were before him. And then verse 28 was the last verse. So Omri rested with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and then Ahab, his son, reigned. But is that the end? Is this all we know about Omri? And what else can we learn? Well, the name Omri is clearly mentioned in numerous ancient Near East inscriptions, and one of the most famous being the Mesha Stele, or Moabite stone. And this is dated around 840 BC, depending on who you talk to. And I took this picture myself when we visited the Louvre in Paris, and that's where it currently resides today. And the stone was actually reconstructed from an impression taken before it was broken. And so you can see the lighter colors of the stone here are the original pieces of the stone, and the rest of it was a reconstruction from that impression that was taken. And in one section, King Mesha, I have the text here, King Mesha of the Moabites describes how Moab was oppressed by Omri and his son, and Mesha says that he was helped by his god Chemosh in several battles to free the Moabites from the oppression and restore their lands. And you can actually read about that in 2 Kings. It says, now Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep breeder, and he regularly paid the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and the wool of 100,000 rams. So you can see that this was pretty severe tribute that he had to pay. But it happened when Ahab died that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. A second famous artifact is the black obelisk of Shalmaneser III, which is currently on display in the British Museum in London. And the obelisk describes how King Jehu sent his tribute to King Shalmaneser III of Assyria. And you can see that in the text here, part of the text says, I received the tribute of Jehu, son of, or house of Omri. And it lists the silver, gold, golden bowl, golden vase, and the other artifacts that were brought as a tribute to the king of Assyria. So for many years, the Assyrians referred to Israel as the house or land of Omri in their writings. And even though King Jehu was not a son of Omri, as we'll see later. So I guess once you write something in stone, it's hard to go back and change that when somebody changes that. So from then on, they just refer to it as the house of Omri. So what else can we learn about the house of Omri? The house of, or the family of Omri that Omri built seems to be primarily based on power or strategy, or even introduced a lot of Baal worship. For example, Omri's son Ahab married Jezebel, who's from Sidon. So she's the daughter of Ethbaal, the king of Sidon. And this could have been maybe a political strategy to, because Sidon was north of Israel, they would have wanted to have good relations and not have to go to war. And so marrying the daughter of Sidon would have established friendly relationships and not have to worry about going to battle against Sidon. However, this greatly influenced Ahab and the rest of Israel to worship pagan gods. And of course, Jezebel also tried to kill a lot of the prophets of the true God. And you can read that in the story of Elijah. Well, Ahab and Jezebel have a daughter, Athaliah, who marries Joram, king of Judah, and Athaliah is Omri's granddaughter. So now his bloodline intersects with David's bloodline in the house of Judah. So you can see here, Jehoram. So that's the other thing that's confusing when you're reading the Bible and just looking at the names, because they named their kids the same names as the other family. And so you'll read one name and think it's the other name. But you can see here that actually Ahaziah dies. He was the king, but he fell through the roof of his home and he injured himself and ended up dying from that injury. So he didn't have any sons, so the kingship went to Joram, and that's on the king of Israel's side. His sister is Athaliah, which you can see there. But also on Judah's side, you have Jehoshaphat. His son is Jehoram, which is sometimes called Joram, which makes it confusing. But I have the yellow arrow here to sort of show the flow of the kingship from one to the next, and you can see how it flows on the side of Israel. So now you can also understand how the kings of Israel and Judah at this time sort of got along, because they're all related. You know, here's my uncle Joram with my nephew Ahaziah down here on the side here, the son of Athaliah. So you can see here, Athaliah marries Jehoram of Judah. They have at least, they had more kids than this, but Ahaziah is the firstborn, so he becomes the king. And I mention here Jehosheba because she's mentioned because she protects Joash, as we'll see in a little bit here. So everything's going well for them, but God is not pleased with what they're doing or how they're acting. They're actually promoting Baal worship and doing the wrong things, and God's not pleased with them. So God has his prophet anoint Jehu, who goes in and kills them all. He kills Ahaziah and then kills Joram, and then Jezebel, who is, actually, he comes up to her in 2 Kings 9, verse 31. And then it says, as Jehu entered the gate, Jezebel says, is it peace, Zimri, murderer of your master? And if you remember, Zimri was the one who killed King Elah. He was the one who assassinated his king. And so Jezebel's bringing this back to mind, saying, are you like Zimri coming to kill your king again? But he wasn't actually the one that killed her. He spoke up to the window, and her servants actually pushed her out the window, and that's how she died. But it was because Jehu entered and was conquering all the kings there that he became king of Israel, and he was fulfilling the duty that God appointed him to do, to kill the sons of Ahab, which actually says there were 70 sons of Ahab that he killed. And then actually, Athaliah comes and finds out that Ahaziah is dead, and she ends up killing all of his sons so that she can become queen. So you can see here that she is the only queen of Judah, and she's the one that became queen because she killed all of the heirs to the throne. And she's queen for 6 years. But however, Jehosheba protects Joash, as we see here, and after 6 years, he becomes king, and she is slain. And he becomes king at the ripe age of 7 years old. So as you can see, there's a lot of intrigue, there's connections, there's things that happen. It's pretty interesting when you all piece it together. Well, in summary, the biblical story of Omri is only 12 verses in the Bible. However, through archaeological evidence, we've learned that he had a huge impact on the surrounding nations of Assyria and Moab. And two famous sons that we covered was the Mesha Stele and the Black Obelisk of Shalmaneser III. And we also read that Omri founded the city of Shamaron, which is Samaria. And Omri's son Ahab married Jezebel, who was a Sidonian. So that was interjecting that bloodline into the kings of Israel at that point. Their daughter Athaliah became the part of the line of David and Judah by marriage through Jehoram, king of Judah. But Omri's story is short and contains a few bare facts about his life, because all of the amazing victories and success that he had, maybe as a commander of the army, were not important if you don't obey God and walk according to his commandments. So if there's a lesson to learn from Omri's life, then that's it. Don't let sin cut your story short. Jesus said, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul?" So I hope this character study of Omri's life and descendants has been helpful in bringing to life a piece of biblical history, and in addition to providing another proof of authenticity of the Bible.